Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Well, once again, this year, the cities of Champaign-Urbana and University of Illinois are hosting Roger Ebert's Overlooked Film Festival. It's the 9th annual event. People from all over the world who love movies, who love watching them, who love making them, are here to watch movies and to talk about movies. And this morning, in this part of Focus 580, we will be talking with the director who is here, one of the guests of the festival. His name is Paul Cox. One of his films, the film Man of Flowers, will be shown as part of the festival. That's tomorrow afternoon at 2:30 at the Virginia Theater in Champaign. It's a film that dates from 1983. So if you don't have the opportunity to go see it on the big screen at the theater, it is available on DVD. And I watched the film last night myself, and I liked it very much. So it is possible for people to see the movie. And as we talk a little bit here this morning about making films, questions, of course, are welcome. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free. We have the chance, so if you're listening over the air and would be a long-distance call, well, you can use our toll-free line. That's 800-222-9455. So 333-WILL, if that makes it any easier, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Paul Cox was born in Holland, has lived some in Australia and other places as well. He began his career with his first full-length feature, that was Illuminations, in 1974, and has continued to make movies, and now he is in post-production for his 22nd feature, Salvation. He's also done some documentaries, and we're pleased that he could be here and talk with us. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
I understand that you started out, before you got involved in making feature films, at least, started out as a photographer. And was your dad also a photographer?
My dad was actually a filmmaker, but we didn't know. After the war, he got rather bitter about everything that went wrong. He had his own little film company and made quite a few nice films, which we never saw. I only saw them a few years ago, after he had died. And he started a photographic business because there was nothing else to be done. But in the attic, he always had old film reels and winders and an old editing machine, and I used to play with this and sitting there dreaming about getting away from this nightmare. And it must have had some sort of influence on me, you know.
And you were the story I've read is that at the time that you were in Australia, you were teaching in college, you were teaching photography, and someone came to you and said, we want to set up a cinema program.
Yes.
And so you ended up getting the job, and in the process being drawn more and more to making movies yourself.
Well, I always think that life is more a matter of fate than choice. We think we have choice, but things happen. And this more or less happened to me. I was teaching in the graphic department, photography and a bit of painting and graphics and all that. And then one day, for some strange reason, they get a big amount of money to start a film department, but of course there was no money for a lecturer. So they suddenly put me in charge of the film department, and I was the best student because I had made a few little films, but I knew very little about it. But in the process of teaching it, I got all sort of experts to come in one day a week and sat in the front row and lapped it up. And within 6 months, I knew all about it and left a job because I was suddenly fascinated. I thought, this is what I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an accident. I wish it had never happened in many ways because it also ruined my life in a way, you know.
I've read you have said that too. It had something to do with just how consuming the process, particularly once you get started and you get into it, just how all-consuming it really is.
Well, I have a fairly obsessive nature, I think, and if you develop a photograph, there's an end to it. But a film is a never-ending adventure, and one gets terribly involved, and so you lose sight of what's really essential. And you know, it has been a tricky road, especially when you want to use film as a means of self-expression. I was not interested in going Hollywood, and I've had all these chances and made a few very big films, of course. But it never really appealed to me. I want to use it as something, like a painter wants to use a canvas, you know. Mm.
Well, I know, having looked at the list of your films, that there certainly are films where not only did you direct, but you were the producer, you edited the film. Some of them, you were the cinematographer. Man of Flowers, was that actually your story?
Essentially, the story was yours.
So I suppose when you do all of those, and some movies, there are different people to do those jobs. When you're doing all of those jobs, it must be that you can never really think about anything else.
But it also saves you from arguing about it.
True, I'm sure.
I mean, the last film I have produced again and written, and I even got the finance together myself. And there was nobody to argue. And all my old friends from the past for many years came and helped, and it was quite a wonderful experience. Mm-hmm. Much better than many things I've gone through where people argue about, not about the essence of the film, but about who gets what and who is, you know, who gets the biggest close-up and all this terrible nonsense that, you know, the film world offers.
Yeah. Well, when you first started making features, you said that it was you realized that this was a great opportunity for self-expression, to be able to say some things that you wanted to say. Is there something particularly about film, about motion pictures, that expands the possibilities either from a still photograph or from a painting or for other things? And what about making movies do you particularly like?
Well, it is a medium. It's a gift to our times. Film is about 110, 120 years old. Mm-hmm. It combines all the art forms in one way or another, or it can. It's the most marvelous, marvelous invention. And mostly abused and misused. You know, it's nowadays it's an item to be sold on the shelves that comes from the shelves of a supermarket. It's, you know, today we're going to see the Terminator, and tomorrow we see Terminator 3. Mm-hmm. And 25 days we see Terminator number 25, etc. It is a great pity to me, but I know the power of film is spectacular. And I always use this example, for instance, in the Second World War, Hitler and Goebbels were very good at manipulating the masses, and they could see the power of the medium. And, you know, if they had been able to go on daily talkback shows like we can do now, the Third Reich could still be marching. The power of it is spectacular. Now, I don't have a very big audience in terms of the films I make. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really, you know, that should be enough proof. It's not really the power, but I think the actual possibilities of the medium are spectacular, and we're only scratching the surface.
Yeah. Can you watch, or do you ever watch, popular commercial movies? I mean, would you have any desire to sit down and watch Spider-Man or Pirates of the Caribbean or something like that? Or would you just say, no, that's a waste of my time, I would just as soon do something else?
I'm not that arrogant to say it's a waste of my time, but it saddens me. Mm. Because if that is what we have to offer to our youth, our children, to our future, then we're in big trouble. And, I'm a war child. I was just born a week before the war started. So the first 5 years of my life, I saw nothing but death and destruction, and the town I came from was totally destroyed, and everybody I knew died, more or less. I was shot. And then the next 5 years, I walked through the ruins of that little town. And in all my life, I have not been able to actually even know, when I get into a hotel and there's a shiny marble floor, I still feel ill at ease, because I look for ruins. And that's where I usually live, too. And that had such an impact on me that when I was 27, 28, I went as a war correspondent to Bangladesh and to India, and saw a lot of terrible things, the horrific things that man can do to man. And that film, you know, film should delight us, enlighten us, and bring, it could be such a fantastic tool, and it's not.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is film director Paul Cox. He is here in Champaign-Urbana to take part in Roger Ebert's Overlooked Film Festival. It's the 9th annual version of the festival. And one of the films that will be shown is Paul Cox's movie Man of Flowers. That's tomorrow afternoon at 2:30. And as I said at the beginning, this is available on DVD. So if you'd like to see the movie and you don't have a ticket for the showing at the Virginia, well, you can certainly see it.
Now you've got to see it on the big screen, and I don't get any percentage from the sale of the DVDs anyway.
Well, it is, you know, the impact on the big screen is always it's always better the way that you can get absorbed, I think, into the – it's not the same experience as seeing on the little screen. But there unfortunately are only so many tickets available for the showing. I don't even know if there are any available. I know that there are – if people want to go and stand and wait and see if some people don't show up to claim their tickets, I think they can do that.
But these days you can actually, with a normal DVD, you can put it in a video projector and you get very, very good quality. It's quite extraordinary. Mm.
We have a caller here. Why don't, if you would put on the headphones there, you'd give it a chance to talk with this person. And others who are listening, you certainly are welcome to call.
What do I push?
Oh, you don't need to push anything. Unless you want to cough, then you can push cough. The caller here is in Urbana and line number one.
Good morning.
Hello. Hiya.
You mentioned you're growing up during difficult times, and I'm wondering what your opinion of movies like Schindler's List is. Not just that particular film, but other films that are trying to give us the ones who did not experience that some small glimpse at what it might have been to have lived through those times. I'm wondering what you think of the attempts to bring that reality to audiences, and if there are certain films that you think have accomplished that view of reality better than others.
What do I push?
No, don't have to push it. You're talking right now with the person.
Well, thank you for that question. I think most of those films exaggerate. There's a very few of those films that actually give the truth, and especially when it comes from a big studio or a big corporation or something. They always have to distort the very truth of the matter, make it bigger. It's always bigger than it really is. A person exists out of an interior and an exterior. What goes on, the people now that have suffered, for instance, through a war, they still carry the pain and the blood and the sweat and the tears with them inside themselves. No film that people make actually shows what actually goes on within the human heart, within the soul itself. And so there are very few, you know, Schindler's List, there is a tiny little touch there, but it's still a big commercial movie with the stars and with all the special effects. And I also think you don't have to show war to show the pain and the horror, the absolute horror, and the horrific things that man does to man by showing it in a war movie. I find every movie that violates body or soul, I like to pass by. I don't go and see them.
Are you familiar with Life is Beautiful?
Yes.
And what is your reaction to that?
Well, I thought it was a very courageous attempt, and it was quite funny, but I'm sure a lot of people that sort of film do not agree with that. Because
I see.
There are a lot of people that went through that very, you know, it's wonderful that somebody has the courage to actually send it up and make a film out of it, but it's still then the ultimate act of manipulation. The best part of that whole film was that it actually got an Academy Award, and Benigni then he got up and walked back on the backs of the chairs.
Uh-huh.
I think that was the greatest act he committed instead of just walking forward. I quite like that. I think a healthy degree of anarchy within filmmaking is essential.
Yeah.
And at least he displayed that. And, you know, it has certainly my approval, but I know a lot of people, especially within the Jewish community, that were immensely hurt by it.
I understand that you say that no film can affect the trauma and the experience. Is there any film which you would recommend as perhaps a better film to give that picture to those of us who did not experience, or has it not been made yet, perhaps? Perhaps you will make it.
No, there are some fantastic films that nobody ever sees. The best films are never seen by anybody.
Well, is there something I could get at our local library?
Well, look up, for instance, a film called Shadows of Our Forgotten Ancestors.
Shadows of Our
Forgotten Ancestors.
Shadows of Our Forgotten Ancestors, okay.
By a Georgian Armenian director called Parajanov.
Janov. Is it
Parajanov? Sergei Parajanov.
J-A-N-O-F-F?
P-A...
No, I skipped that and just went to the Janov. J-A-N-O-F-F?
Sergei.
Yeah.
Oh, forget about that. Parajanov. They know him as Parajanov.
Okay.
And he was one of the great filmmakers. Every time he made...
Wonderful.
Every time he made a film, he went to jail for 5 or 6 years. Mm. And he finally, after he had become quite famous, after he'd made 5 or 6 films and spent half of his life in jail...
Mm.
And then somebody said, and this is the most, this is exactly, and I think it's a very good example to sum up what I'm trying to say, is that when Parajanov finally was let out of Russia, and they asked him, Mr. Parajanov, how does it feel now to be a star? And he said, stars are in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
You should have seen me living in jail. I was not even allowed to wear any underpants.
Mm-hmm.
The lice and the fleas ate me alive.
Mm-hmm.
Star, I've never heard such absurdity.
Oh.
That's what he said. Also, it is shameful that the work of this great man, because I've taught in quite a few of American universities, and I was find the... ignorance baffling, because people think that Steven Spielberg and Bruce Willis is the actual industry, and the past, you know, is Hitchcock, etc., etc. there was a big world out there of filmmakers. If you go back to in Hungary, it was a man called Husarek. Nobody knows the guy, knew the guy. Of course, they all finished up in a madhouse, but they made films. They made spectacular films that had an enormous impact on my life when I had the chance to see them.
Husarek?
Husarek.
Oh,
Husarek. If you can ever find them, you do very well, because they've probably all been locked away. And so was he, and he died in a madhouse.
And what was his name?
Husarek.
Oh, that was his name?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I thank you very much. You speak in a lyrical manner. I think I could just listen to you for hours.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. Let's talk with someone else. This is someone on line number 2. Hello.
I would encourage people who want to see the movie or any of the other movies at Ebertfest to just go over and stand in line, because even when everything has been sold out in past Ebertfests, not all the pass holders can manage to go to all the movies. And they say that they've gotten everybody in for every movie. So it's worth going, and it's really nice to see things on a big screen, and also to have the audience participation and talk with folks such as yourself afterwards, because of the there's a discussion afterwards, and sometimes there's a chance to go up and talk individually with the guests. A number of times the filmmakers have said that it's really different to see the film with a large audience, and because it adds, the audience reaction adds to seeing the film. Even if you're not aware of the audience reaction, you still, it when people are holding their breath every once in a while, if there's something that brings some other response, it's really nice, and people are really pay a lot of attention to these films, the audience.
It makes an enormous difference.
Yeah. So I encourage people to go, even if they don't have a ticket, and stand in line and at the ticket office. Thanks.
I've got a pass, and it's available. because I've seen the film.
Okay. Yeah, he doesn't need to see it. He's seen it. Paul Cox is our guest. He's a director. He was born in Holland, has lived a lot of his life in Australia, other places as well. He certainly worked and made movies in Australia. He made his first full-length feature film in 1974 and now is wrapping up on his 22nd, one of his movies. This is a film titled Man of Flowers. Will be shown at the film festival at the Overlooked, Roger Ebert's Overlooked Film Festival. It will be shown tomorrow afternoon, Saturday afternoon at 2:30. So if you're interested, you can go and see if you can get in. Otherwise, it is available on a DVD. You can see it that way. Questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. I have a friend who's a writer, writes novels and stories, and I think is a pretty good writer. And one of the things I know at some point we were talking about an adaptation of a novel, which he thought it was a good novel, but and it was adapted and it ran on public TV. He was very unhappy with it, and I think that the thing that he said he was unhappy about was his feeling that film can't show what's going on inside the characters. You can't do that in the way that you can with a novel, where you as the writer can explain you can tell the reader what's going on. His sense was that it's just in the visual medium, it's just not possible. How do you deal with people's internal states?
He is wrong, but he's also right. Film has nothing to do with literature or the theater. A film should be much more seen in the light of the dance and music and painting, because they're totally different mediums. At the same time, if film is used properly, one can dig much deeper. But when I go to foreign cities, I always spend my time in bookshops and find books that interest me. I don't go and try to find a film that might interest me, because usually you'll find so much more depth. After all, we are human. We are here to live, and we're here to die. And I want to be reminded of my place in society. I want to be reminded of the fact that I'm a human being that thinks and feels and struggles. And I cannot understand that these very priorities that are so essential, like in so many cases you talk to people, they've never seen a dead body. It's essential to grow up with life and death at the same time. Very often when you have a very intensely emotional or an intensely deeply searching movie, nobody will go and see it because people want to be, they've been conditioned to be entertained. Mm-hmm. When you have the slogan, that's entertainment, to me it's terribly arrogant to say this to somebody. That's entertainment. What's entertainment? What's entertaining to you can be very boring to me, and vice versa. People are not conditioned to actually properly explore a film. And I've just only mentioned two filmmakers that have fascinated me, like this Husarek and Parajanov. If, for instance, in Parajanov, a horseman is being killed, and instead of seeing the killing, and like in any American movie, the axe would split his skull and then whatever, the horseman is being killed, you know he loved horses, and then you see this horse dripping with blood slowly going across the screen. It's a much more powerful metaphor for what actually goes on within his dying moments, and it's very powerful, and you never forget it. It influenced me, one little image. Mm-hmm. We are bombarded by so much imagery that is meaningless. We don't, because it's very important, a little meaning, which comes back to your friend's thing about literature and film. If we had a chance to properly explore one image, and it can be a little teardrop, it can be a raindrop, a little petal falling of a flower, a little autumn leaf dancing in the wind, it can be so small. But we bypass the essence there by not giving it any attention at all. We want to be big, and we're living in a world now where there's no more time or interest for the real essence of life. Life is a, you know, breath on the feather on what's it called? A feather on the breath of God.
Mm. You sound tremendously sad when you say these things. Has that always been your experience? And I suppose one wonders why you keep trying, why you keep making movies.
Well, I wonder too. but I have a very healthy and well-developed sense of humor. Don't worry about this. But now there's initial sadness that's there. Yeah. It came with a lot of death I saw and a lot of tragedy mm-hmm. that I went through. But having had a very extremely religious background, this sort of natural guilt came with it, you know. I was an altar boy in the Catholic Church, choir boy, and then I started to become a priest in just a mansion, and then I became a hippie, and so I went through all these stages. But the actual guilt of the church always traveled with me, and I've made a film called Salvation, which actually is it's a film against religion, organized religion. It's about losing God but finding love, and you know, seeing God as love instead of the God that we have invented. We have invented our gods. And for the sake of that very God, how many people are being slaughtered on a daily level right through the centuries? Mm. But this is not a serious film. I might be talking seriously about it. There is great irony, and it's quite a funny film.
Well, I would be interested in having you talk a little bit about Man of Flowers, and we'll try not to say too much. I don't want to, for anyone who's going to see the movie, I don't want to give away too much. But I just saw the movie last night myself, so it's fresh in my mind. And I guess now listening to you, one of the things that I think is very clear about that movie is that indeed, one of the things I would say that I liked about it was that it does have a wonderful sense of humor. It is funny. It is also very touching. There are great moments of sadness, or at least I think you feel for the characters in the film. And we were talking just a little bit before we got going about the fact that you were perhaps a little bit surprised that the film has been as popular as it is, that people have responded to it, because you were... I think the question you asked me was something like, well, what is it exactly? As if to say, well, what really is this film about? I guess I have some ideas. I suppose you have some ideas, too. What do you think that Man of Flowers is about? Or you wrote the story that is the basis for the film, so you must have had some idea what story that you wanted to tell.
But I'd much rather hear you. But to me, firstly, don't forget, it was the third film I made in a row, and the others were produced, and I was so very angry with the actual people that produced the film before. Mm-hmm. When the film was finished, it was a film called Lonely Hearts, which went off to win Best Film of the Year, and it's still one of those films that goes. But the producers had decided, oh, I'd really, really gone wrong here, and I didn't listen to them and all that. Then I decided to go and become my own producer. No more of this nonsense of people that have never touched a movie camera and sit there sharpening their pencils and know how to answer the phone and talk to a lawyer and call themselves producers. So thank you very much. I can do that myself. So that's in that spirit we made Man of Flowers, and it is basically based, the little boy is based on my own childhood experiences, of course. Hmm. People, I made a film after this was called My First Wife. It was a marriage, which of course my marriage broke up when I made this film. But My First Wife, people say that's an autobiographical film. No, it's not. This one is very autobiographical. Mm. And then I was good friends with Werner Herzog, who is here now. And then when I rang Werner in Germany, I said, you have to blame my father, because that's the way my father was in the film. He was a stern and, you know, vicious.
What do you think about that? You're thinking now, just the type, this is the man that needs to play this.
Well, it was either him or me should play this. Robert Werner came over. He almost ripped that little boy's ear off in the flashback.
Yeah.
And then later on, his brother saw the movie, and he said, my God, Werner was so much like our father. So, you know, Werner had a similar sort of experience in terms of being always put down, and, you know, you could never do anything, and it was horrific.
This is a film, the central character is a man, he's a middle-aged man. He is living alone. He has enough money to indulge what seems to be a very highly refined aesthetic sense. He loves beautiful objects. He particularly loves flowers. He recognizes them for their intense, sexual beauty. He responds to them. He loves beautiful objects, but he seems unable to connect with human beings. He seems to be able to recognize beauty when it's in an object that it's not alive except for the flowers. And yet in his interactions with people, he seems really to not to understand at all their motivations, their internal states. He has no understanding of irony. He has no understanding of sarcasm. He doesn't know that his therapist, who is an idiot, is taking him to the cleaners. And at the same time, I think you really come to like this character for many reasons. And I think that one of the things about the movie is that the other characters around him think that there's something wrong with this man. But in fact, I think in many ways he's more sane than everybody else in the movie. And yet he has this disconnect, this inability to, in a sense, to understand his own emotions and to find some sort of channel to make a connection, physical and otherwise, with other people. Mm. And I think he's, you know, one of the things that I like about the movie is that it's just that you present the viewer with this character as a kind of a puzzle. And as you go along through the movie, what you want to do is you're thinking about who is this man? What is his experience of the world? How did he get to be like this? What, you know, where does this character go? How does he survive? All of those sorts of questions. And I think it's a mark of the fact that the film had some effect on me, at least, is that I still now am thinking about this, and I expect over the next few days the character in the movie stays with me, which I think says something about him.
Well, he's a true individual, and I think individualism, nationalism has to go. Individualism should take over, and people. We just had a panel about politics in film and how it combines. And, you know, I don't make overt sort of political statements on any level, but I think individualism should take over from nationalism. And there is a great saying about those who love waving flags shouldn't be allowed to have one, because I do not believe that we should be. You know, Mr. Bush all the time says, the American people, there are other people in the world. Everybody is the people of this world. We are in this together. If you urinate in your river here, it goes down to the next country and you pick it up over there. We're all in the same stream. And I think individualism is terribly important. This man is quite unique. I see him as a unique example of the truth. He always speaks the truth, what's in his heart. Mm-hmm. He is not a cliché. He has not been conditioned to behave like we always say the wrong thing in the right way, because that's what conditioning does to us. We just don't know. We say, good morning, how are you? Have a nice day, and all this sort of stuff. Means nothing unless we really say it with great freshness. Every day is the first and last day of your life, but then you should put all everything into this. So this man is a unique individual, and even then, all these years ago, I thought individualism is the only thing that actually can save us. We must celebrate. If you put people together in the cinema, it's very interesting. Very often, like, it has surprised me how popular that film was. It was a great, huge success. In fact, both the protagonist and myself, we had nervous breakdowns, and we both went to a hospital. We were not ready for this.
You're not being metaphorical. You're not making that. You're saying that's absolutely really.
This
true.
Really happened. Yeah. It was just too much. We were not ready for this. But if you if you look at people in a cinema and then they respond to this film, and I think, yeah, why do you respond? Because if you hear, for instance, T.S. Eliot reading his own poetry, would it have been all after all the cups, the marmalade, the tea, some talks of you and me? Has it all been worthwhile to have bitten off the matter with a smile to lead towards the overwhelming question? And you can go on and on and on, and you know that it leads to nowhere but everywhere, because it's sheer poetry. Mm-hmm. And this man is a poet. He can feel poetry like all of us. So very many times it's happened to me that an audience, somebody in the audience says, for whom do you actually make your film? I always then pointed him and said, for you. And not just for you, but for the person next to you and the person behind you and the person in front of you, for each one of you individually, but not for the lot of you, because together we are a pack of rats. We are dangerous. We are not a nice species. But interesting enough, individually we are unique. And that's a celebration of the uniqueness of a thinking, feeling, struggling individual that has had so much problems growing up, etc. Yeah. And, of course, that is slightly autobiographical, but we made a joke out of it. We made it for nothing because I was so angry about the film before that was put away by the producers that I stole out of the producer's office and put into the National Awards and got Best Film of the Year. I stole that film myself. Yeah. Then I made this out of anger, but we didn't lose our sense of humor, and the film had a huge impact.
Well, it does. I'm interested now having you tell some of this backstory that I think also the movie Man of Flowers does have something to say about commercialization of art.
Mm.
There's a character in the film who's a painter and not a very good one. He assaults the paintings, and he doesn't just make them. He assaults them, and there's at one point in which your main character is talking about what makes a good painting, what makes a good piece of sculpture. And he says something really wonderful about painting. He says something like, you know it's good if you look at it and then you close your eyes and you can still see it.
That's right. Yeah.
He says the sculpture, he says, you know it's a good piece of sculpture if you want to touch it. So he is engaged. Mm. He's not just engaged intellectually. I mean, he's engaged physically, and that maybe what you see in his boyhood is that he was always like that, and that people thought there was something wrong with him because he was like that. It was he was said when he was a boy, he said, well, this kid's not normal. Something's wrong with him, because he was so engaged in the world in a real immediate sort of sense. So obviously it must be that some of what that character says, and you know, his resistance to the idea of art as a commodity, something that's made to order, must somehow come out of your experience, your immediate past experience.
But it is extraordinary how that film has penetrated all these years, and how people have never forgotten how it always bounces back. It is extraordinary.
Yeah.
There must be something there, you know.
Yeah. Our guest is Paul Cox. He's a film director. He has made 22 movies altogether, 22 features. His first was Illuminations. That was 1974. Has done a lot of his work in Australia, and he's here to take part in the 9th annual Overlooked Film Festival, an event created all these many years ago now by Roger Ebert. The movie's being shown at the Virginia Theater in Champaign, and the movie here that we've talked a little bit about, Man of Flowers, is one of those that will be shown. This is tomorrow afternoon at 2:30. It is also out on a DVD, if you... That's the way you're going to see it. You should see it. Questions are welcome. We have somebody here in Gibson City. We'll talk with them on line number one.
Yes, hello.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to thank you for all the good work you've done, and I want to thank you for your comment about flag waving and nationalism, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. We are all human beings, and I've had the opportunity to go overseas several times, and I just opened my eyes to all of us being human beings and having the same wants and needs. And I also find that I'm looking for my movies in foreign film, and two of my favorites are Yesterday, an African film, and Rabbit Proof Fences, which I'm part Native American, and I wish, I don't know if there is one, I've never seen it or heard about it, but it'd be nice if some American filmmaker would make something about Native Americans and the issue with residential schools. And I was just also wondering, what do you think of the movie West Bank Story? And I'll hang up and listen. Again, thank you for all you do. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you for your question. I haven't seen West Bank Story, but I think in America, for instance, my God, you have a minefield of the most amazing topics here. There is so much to be done. Instead of spending all that money now in Iraq again, for heaven's sake, it's the same like us going to the moon. Why don't we go to the bottom of the ocean? It's so spectacular. Why do we spend this enormous amount of energy and money? What do we want to do? Are we going to find oil there or something rather? What is this strange urgent man before he has his own house in order to move and destroy somebody else's house? I find this quite extraordinary. We should stop doing this. We should try and celebrate the earth. And that's why I also always think that art rather than ethics should take over the essential metaphysical needs of man. You know, that's why I also think that what religion is sort of somehow plays a part to feed the essential metaphysical needs, which we all have, because you only have to look at a video taken from a spaceship and you see the Earth. And although I'm I call myself an informed agnostic, I find it quite spectacular to see this little Earth of ours in which we're so little, so nothing. Mm-hmm. And who do we think we are? I think it was a very bleak day when we actually went to the moon. What a wonderful thing to do, but why didn't we? We had one of the big gangsters of the century, Mr. Nixon. You know, it's saying a small step for us. He was talking to the man on the moon. Have I been cut off?
No. No, not on this show. No.
You're talking to the man on the moon, and I think, why didn't he talk somewhere to a little child on a road somewhere in Asia, somewhere to a little mother feeding a child or something? No, and why plant the American flag? And why not the flag of mankind? Where did all these brains come? They came from all over the world. America had the money to actually. What a marvelous example that would have been of our greatness to go there once and actually put the flag of mankind or a little. Man has been here. Thank you very much. We will never come back. And they should have taken the little bag of feces that they left there on the moon. They should have taken it back home. You cannot do that. You cannot pollute the universe like that.
Let's talk with someone else. We have someone here in Urbana. Line number two. Hello?
Yes, hello. How are you?
Good.
I think you hit on something real interesting earlier when you said information overload. It's almost as if, like, I don't say anybody, especially younger people now in my latter 50s, you're bombarded with information. It's like you seem to have, I really enjoy your cynicism. I think it's justified. As well as important. It's like actually a breath of fresh air, to say it. Let me put it that way. Everybody's always so polite in media now. And but this information overload thing has really been a big deal to me because I have had an opportunity to sort of try to clear my mind. I don't know if you can actually do that, sort of in the Buddhist sense or Zen, whatever. And that seems to have been forgotten or lost in the last. I mean, I'm kind of a product of the 60s and 70s, you know, find yourself and all that sort of stuff. And you maybe wonder if that's even valid. But I'm just curious. I mean, I like your approach to things. It's very interesting. And I also like the approach you take to your films from what I've gathered from just listening to you. But I'm really interested in your take on information overload because we are so overwhelmed. I mean, people, you walk around and you see everybody carrying a cell phone and they're looking at it as if, like, they're not looking at what they're looking at the screen. They're always looking at screens. And I'm just curious as to if you would elaborate on that. And I really appreciate your work. I've seen your films, and you're a very interesting man. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, thank you for that question, because it's incredible how we are bombarded by all that. For any person that wants to do anything or remember properly, it says in the Gita, for instance, that you must always have a clear and fresh mind. How can somebody who runs a country, like Mr. Bush in this case, How can he actually remember what the human heart is capable of? How can he actually remember what it means to hold a child or to make love properly? How can he remember when you're in charge of all this? Because he's bombarded by so much rubbish. I think it's absolutely essential. Who stands still on the street corner and watches the world go by? It is extraordinary. In Tokyo, there is a crossing where some 20 to 30,000 people every 30 seconds cross the road and then come back. And I've done this several times. And I think everybody in any position of power should do this, because you see also how utterly insignificant you are, how totally ridiculous we are, why we march up and down to do this. And also the uniqueness, because there's a terrible cliche to do this, but yet again, if you then single out one face there, you find every face is full of drama, full of tears, full of a past. Everybody within that crazy crowd that crosses the road because they've been conditioned to go to work and go home and bypass the very essence of life itself is a very poor victim of what we have achieved. What we have actually achieved with all our ingenuity is a world that bombards us with the most extraordinary rubbish that has nothing to do with what actually goes on within our hearts. Nothing. We have... our priorities are way off. And this idea of an image, I think an idea of an image, there are certain, I would recommend one film that has had an enormous impact on me. It was a film called Persona by Ingmar Bergman. Now, he's still alive. What an extraordinary filmmaker. All these films were made for $50,000 or $100,000. Fortunately, he had enough support from the Swedish Institute to allow him to indulge. Now, when you see that film, it's just between two women and how they merge and then separate. But it has a whole world that is very simple. It's in the black and white. It's done on a little island where he lives. It is a spectacular film that will burn into your conscience forever. I think it would be essential viewing for anyone to actually free themselves from this. If you look at Fox News, I think it's shameful it should be taken off the air, because there is nothing but every news flash and every presenter looks and speaks exactly the same. They are as biased as they come, and I think it's a disgusting station. It should be taken off the air. And I believe in total freedom and everything, but this is not freedom. This is pathetic. It's pathetic that people like Cheney, who goes out for quail hunting, little birds that can't even fly, you know, that's the vice president of the United States, goes and shoots somebody else in the face because he can't even hit those. That one of his demands when he goes into a hotel is that all the stations have to be tuned into Fox. Now, who is running this county? What are these people? This is unbelievable, you know. And it's a great pity.
We're coming to the point where we have maybe just a couple of minutes left. One of the articles that I read about you, someone writing about your films and what you have done so forth, said, opined that overall the main theme of your films is human frailty. Do you think that that's true?
I think, yes, to make a film that in some way tries to expose the human condition is a very frail act. It's a very difficult thing to do, because you have the world against you. They don't want you to do it. This morning or yesterday, Jack Valenti died, supposed to be the hero of the American film industry, and who went around and corrupting all sort of other countries to take American product only, so they couldn't even show their own films anymore. I don't know whether you knew of him, but Jack Valenti was the great boss of the film mafia, so to speak.
He also was the guy who was behind the ratings systems.
He was a great rating man, and he was very angry with France because they wouldn't buy. In any other country, he used to convince the government to have at least 80% of American product. Mm-hmm. Why can't they have indigenous film culture? It's very important. Leave these people alone. We can exchange things. We should exchange things much more so. But Valenti was the champion, greatly celebrated here. But I happened to be at a dinner once where he said, and this is absolutely true, he said to me, I don't like films, the type of films you make. I said, well, what do you mean by not? I said, they have no meaning, they don't make any money, it's nothing. And I said, well, which of my films have you seen? He said, I haven't seen any of them, but I don't like them. It's absolutely true, you know. And so I'm supposed to feel sorry for this man that he died yesterday. I think he had a very strange way of looking at the power of film, I tell you.
Well, we're going to have to stop. We're here at the end of the time. Our guest, Paul Cox, has made now many movies. He's working on number 22. One of his films, we talked a little bit about, Man of Flowers, will be shown tomorrow afternoon at 2:30 at the Virginia Theater as part of Roger Ebert's Overlooked Film Festival. And that and others are also available on DVD. If that's the way you're going to see him, you should see them. Go down to the place where you rent movies and look for his films. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate it.